As I lay me down, heaven hear me now. I'm lost without a cause, after giving it my all. Winter storms have come and darkened my sun. After all that I've been through, who on earth can I turn to? I look to you, I look to you. After all my strength is gone, in you I can be strong. I look to you, I look to you. And when melodies are gone, in you I hear a song. I look to you.
About to lose my breath, there's no more fighting left. Sinking to rise no more, searching for that open door. And every road I've taken led to my regret. And I don't know if I'm gonna make it. Nothing to do but lift my head. I look to you. I look to you. After all my strength is gone, in you I can be strong. I look to you. I look to you. And when melodies are gone, in you I hear a song.
I look to you.
When the levees are broken, my walls have come down, tumbling down on me. When the rain is falling, defeat is calling, I need you to set me free. Take me far away from the battle.
I need you to shine on me. I look
to you. Strength is gone, in you I can be strong. I look to you, I look to you, I look to you. And when melodies are gone, in you I hear a song. I look to you. Yes, I look.
Doesn't come from the hills, but the maker of heaven and earth.
I look to you.
When things are down, my faith looks up to thee.
I look to you.
No other help I know. That's why I look to you.
Thank you for that music. Looking unto Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross. We'll come back to that thought a little later. I'm going to introduce myself just a little bit for a purpose. I am, as was mentioned earlier, a teacher here in the seminary, although many of you don't know me very much, because my office is in the School of Education. So I live over in that building. But I am an ordained minister. So I sort of combine this role of pastor and teacher. And can we have the next slide? Next. There we go. And this is Ephesians 4. Verse 11, and it says, "And Christ gave some apostles and some prophets and some evangelists and some pastors and teachers." And if you look at the Greek, it doesn't have an article, and so you can actually combine the word pastor-teacher. And so I'm here today as a pastor-teacher, and I'm not going to preach to you so much as I'm going to be a teacher. But I want you folk to also think about your roles as pastor teacher, because if you are not a pastor teacher, you're missing out on half of your ministry. Next. Ellen White says this: in the highest sense, the work of education and the work of redemption are one. I could go into a long history of the Adventist Church, but through the 1870s and the 1890s, Ellen White spent much of her time education. And she said that this was one of the major aspects of our church's mission. Any of you found the word education in the 28 Fundamentals of Beliefs? It is not there. It's not there. Teaching is mentioned 11 times. 9 of those times it means doctrine. 2 of those times it means the gifts of the Spirit. Education is not mentioned in the 28 Fundamental Beliefs. In the seminary, we teach theology without reference to anatomy or psychology. In the School of Education, we teach the nature of man without reference to theology. So we have these two buildings on this campus teaching about the nature of man, the nature of humanity, and we don't know how to talk to each other. We have not yet sort of figured out how education and redemption are one. We're supposed to be talking about Jesus is practical. And so I hope that I'm going to give you some practical ideas here today. Next slide, please. A knowledge of physiology will and hygiene should be the basis of all educational effort. We need to understand, for example, how the brain works. I was at a conference recently. This was a conference of PhD professors, and talking about seminarians and the studies that they should undertake, they said that no graduate, no PhD graduate from a seminary should be able to graduate without a class in the study of the brain. We have so much information that is coming to us about the brain and how we can use that in the work of the gospel in reaching out in mission. And so I want us to spend a little time today thinking about some of these aspects of our anatomy and physiology. Next slide. This is the traditional view of the nature of humanity. There is a great difference between mind and body, inasmuch as body is by nature always divisible, and the mind is entirely indivisible. This is René Descartes, living about 1600, and what he was saying is that a body you can take and chop up in pieces, but a mind you cannot chop up in pieces. It's some sort of an ethereal, non-substantial thing out there. It is a soul, a spirit, something that doesn't relate, to the body. Next slide. The modern view of science is that we are actually not ethereal beings. And I'm not suggesting that I agree with Francis Crick, who was one of the co-discoverers of DNA, but he says, your sense of personal identity and free will are in fact no more than the behavior of a vast assembly of nerve cells and their associated molecules. You're nothing but a pack of neurons. Suggesting that we are entirely bodily beings. And though I don't agree with everything that Francis Crick says, I am inclined to believe that we are, in fact, very little more than a pack of neurons. Let's take a look at the next slide, and this is Antonio Damasio, a modern scholar in brain research. I agree, except that where Descartes specified a control achieved by a non-physical agent, I envision a biological operation structured within the human organism and not one bit less complex, admirable, or sublime. So here's a modern scientist looking at the brain, and he's saying, the stuff between your ears is dust. It is the dust of the universe. And from an Adventist perspective and from a biblical perspective, that should not be so surprising. We are, after all, made of the dust of the ground. And Ellen White talks about how there are electrical impulses. There are physical things going on as we think. And this is what science is telling us. They're saying the old traditional ideas are wrong. Descartes was wrong. He said the soul and the body are separate, but we as Adventists say the soul is the person. The mind and the body are one entity. Now, the next one's a little bit challenging. Contrary to traditional scientific opinion, feelings are just as cognitive as other percepts. So cognitive meaning the activities of the mind are physical. And the feelings that we have are just as physical as the other structures and things that are happening in the mind. They are the result of a most curious physiological arrangement that has turned the brain into the body's captive audience. Now, this is challenging. This is challenging to our ideas as Christians because the Bible, Ellen White, say the mind must control the body should not control the mind. And science is telling us that the body controls the mind. So how do we deal with that? Well, I'm not a theologian in the sense of some of the theologian professors that you have here, but I think we are all theologians, and I've spent a lot of time thinking about the body and the mind and the will and how this all works together, and I've put together my own theology of education, which is sort of the foundation on which I work. The most important part of this is that we are made in God's image, and we need to be restored back to that image because we've failed. And it is in this sense that the work of education and the work of redemption are one. We are to be redeemed into God's image. We are to be educated into God's image. And this brings us back to our scripture text. The Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength, and your neighbor as yourself. As we think about this text, I don't think Jesus just chose this for the sake of it. He's quoting Deuteronomy and he's quoting Leviticus, but he put it together because it actually represents who we are as human beings. And so as we look at the next slide, I've sort of put this in a diagram form, and you can take a look at that as I speak, but the different aspects that Jesus talked about are the different aspects of ourselves as human beings in the image of God. And this change within us begins with the heart, the will, and develops through the mind. And from the mind, it goes out to the other aspects of who we are. And so my theology actually is a theology of a new heart and a renewable mind. A new heart and a new renewable mind. And if you want to hear more about this, come and take a class from me sometime, but we don't have time to talk about it today. But I want to focus directly on the aspect of this theology that relates to the mind. The influence of the mind on the body, as well as of the body on the mind, should be emphasized. The power of the will and the importance of self-control should also be shown. Ellen White tells us that we need to spend time thinking about the mind. You folks study theology. I challenge you to study anatomy and physiology as well, because you will find immense ideas, a new world that you can put together in your ministry if you will spend time on this. So let's take a look at a diagram of the mind. We're not going to spend time on this except to say that the central part there is what the scientists call the primitive part of the mind. Now, we wouldn't go along with that because we don't believe in evolution, but the central part of the mind, which is the amygdala, the thalamus, and the hypothalamus, these are the areas that deal with emotion. And Descartes was suggesting that this was sort of an ethereal thing, non-substantial. Even science up to the present day has seen emotion as non-substantial. But the fact is that our emotions are bodily. They are bodily, they are material, they are of the dust of the ground. Just as sublime as the other theologians who don't believe the way we do, but still of the dust of the ground. All right. So, how does emotion control us? Because this bodily emotional stuff is what Descartes was saying controls the mind. And the system that the mind uses is, as we experience pleasure and pain, all of these things come to us, and we experience them, and we take note of them. And the emotional part of the brain makes a record. Makes a record of the things we don't like specifically, and the things that we do like chocolate. Okay? Chocolate. All right? The brain tells us that we like chocolate. And when we have all of these messages coming into us all the time, so many messages coming to us, we can't deal with them all. And so the emotional part of our brain sets up somatic markers. Now, you studied Greek, and soma means body. These are bodily markers in the brain. In the emotional part of the brain, these are material dust in the brain that tells you what you like and what you don't like. And based on all of your experiences, especially experiences of pleasure and joy, your brain picks up on this. So when the information comes in, there's too much, and this inner part of your brain says, ah, but there's a message about chocolate. I like chocolate. I'm going to think about that one. I like music. I'm going to think about that one. And so the physical part of the brain, there, this inner part of the brain, is picking out what you will think about and sending that on to the rest of the brain. And it's like a filter keeping out all the junk that it's not interested in. Your brain is doing that for you physically. Next slide. We're not going to talk about this, but this is about neurotransmitters. And neurotransmitters are sort of sparks in the brain between the synapses, in the synapses of the brain, and they are the rewards for pleasurable experiences. So when something happens that you like, the brain fires, and it makes a pathway, and that pathway becomes a habit, and it tells you the things that you like, and it says, go back and do it again. All right. This is how your brain is building you in the image of God or not in the image of God. You are being built physically in the image of God or not. Next slide. Aristotle said that what we are aiming for in life is happiness. We want this joy, this happiness, and that's the aim of human life. Now, you might say, well, you know, as Christians, that's not the right thing to do. That's not right. But next slide. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who, for the joy set before him, endured the cross. For the happiness set before him, Jesus endured the cross. Now, I'm not going to say that Jesus has somatic markers, but maybe he does, because he carries this body with him for all eternity. Maybe Jesus developed somatic markers of the joy set before him so that he could endure the cross. Okay, we'll leave that one till eternity to find out whether he has somatic markers. What I want to say to you at this point is that as a pastor, teacher, your lesson plan for your church, the desired learning outcomes for your church, had better include the joy of being a Christian. Because if you don't include the joy of being a Christian, then to your brain, religion is irrelevant. Remember, the somatic markers there are telling you what do you enjoy and what don't you enjoy. And if the somatic markers aren't saying religion is joyful, it's a happy experience, and if you as a pastor, teacher, aren't helping your congregation to experience that joy, you are irrelevant to their lives. Because their brain says, I'm not interested in that. I'm not interested in that. So folks, there's a lot to learn from the study of the brain that can help you as a pastor to fulfill the mission that you have. Next slide. This is what Ellen White said. Let the youth be directed to something better than display, ambition, or self-indulgence. That's the world today. She could have written it yesterday. Bring them in contact with truer beauty, with loftier principles, and with nobler lives. Lead them to behold one altogether lovely. The enthusiasm, the generous devotion, the passionate ardor of the youth find here their true object. Duty becomes a delight, and sacrifice a pleasure. Can you help your congregation to find duty to be a delight and sacrifice a pleasure? And it doesn't happen like we're doing it here, making you sit in a pew. This isn't Christianity. Christianity is involvement in the world, in the needs of the world. Christianity is living in service to others, which is the only way, I believe, to find the happiness that we seek. Jesus, for the joy set before him, endured the cross. Duty became a delight, and sacrifice a pleasure. Next slide. Next one. Thank you. Duty became a delight, and sacrifice a pleasure. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame. What's on your mind? Him first, I think. Yeah, thanks.